2017, and the time is 8 a.m. We have a quorum of the Audit Committee, and I'll call this meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. Our first agenda item is to review and approve the minutes of the June 16 Audit Committee meeting held on June 16, 2017. These minutes were circulated to the members of the agenda packet. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Okay, do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
Second.
All right, I've got a first and a second. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Okay, next we have the agency's review of their audit activities. Leslie?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 7 is the report for the outstanding audit findings for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner, and there's several new items on there from our recent audits that you are going to hear about in a few minutes from the Garza and Gonzalez and Associates audits on the TIFI. The TIFI fund and on the registration process, but you'll see on the outstanding items, one of our items is already completed. There's four items in process. The first one is from our older DPS audit. That is expected to be complete by the end of August. And then there's three additional items that are noting in progress. These have either already been fully implemented now or will be by the end of the month, except for the last remaining item is dependent. That one will be a little bit longer. That's dependent somewhat on the transition of a staff member to a new position and on some continued maturity with our ACE exam tool. So we anticipate full implementation of our response to that audit finding by the end of first quarter FY18. So that would be November. So, and that's my report on outstanding audit findings. Okay.
So, Madam Chair, on page 8, the Texas Department of Banking, we have an outstanding item at the State Auditor's Office concerning user rights to access, and so that has been corrected, but we will have another evaluation performed at the end of this month just to make sure everything is set.
All right. Caroline?
You're right. That's good. Okay, very good. For savings and mortgage lending, starting on page 9, the SORM audit report is on page 9. There were no recommendations. The report compliments Antonia Antoff and our staff, and I want to acknowledge them as well for the good work that they did on this audit and do generally in our audits. So, on page 14, the outstanding items on the Garza Gonzalez MIS. We've been reporting to you that the risk assessment would begin sometime during the summer. It began last month, so that is in progress. And then the audit trail recommendation, we're continuing to work with our third-party vendor on that issue. On the thrift examination, we are still on target to have this implemented by the end of August. And on the SAO audit, we've developed the process and documented the process on the first item, the AFR item. We will test it and consider it implemented once we've tested it in September when you actually do the AFR and have that secondary review done. And then the next two items under the SAO audit are complete. And the SORM audit I just mentioned, there were no recommendations.
Okay, great, thanks. Discussion of impossible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's May 31st, 2017 investment officer reports.
And thank you. The Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner reports start on page 15. You'll see the first report is for the Residential Mortgage Loan Originator Recovery Trust Fund. There's just normal activity within that fund reported for the third quarter. Nothing unusual. And then on page 16 is the Financial Education Endowment Fund. Again, we'll be talking about this fund a bit later in a couple of areas of the Audit Committee meeting, but as far as the activity in the fund in the third quarter, there's, the report's there for you, but there's it's normal activity, nothing unusual to report.
Commissioner, can I ask a question? Why do we keep, what's the level of cash that we keep in that fund?
So, the level of cash, and we'll, there's actually a report when we can look at that, perhaps kind of how that's grown, but we are working on a formula. We're about to make another movement of the cash into the endowment, but we are following some procedures that's similar to, because our fund should be kept similar to investments by the employee's retirement system. So it uses sort of a 10% threshold of cash plus, you know, we keep needed funds for grant disbursements. And so it's high right now. We tend to like to space out our investments. We're not all at one time. I mean, but we have to make fairly large investments. So we're due to make another investment like this month or early next month. So,
okay.
That's it for us.
Okay. On page 17, would be the trust funded prepaid funeral guarantee fund investment report. We start out at $1.3 million. That's normal activity. The details are below. It also indicates where the money is held, so we have the liquidity in the Treasury Safekeeping Fund, and then we have some CDs out there. So it's in compliance with our investment strategies. And then on page 18, the insurance funded prepaid a guarantee fund report. It's a smaller amount because it started much later, $441,000 at the beginning. Normal activity, and then it indicates where these funds are held. Then on page 19 would be the seized prepaid funeral funds. We had seized some funds from the Alcorn Funeral and Cremation Care Company, and those funds have been distributed because we were able to get another company to take over that liability. So that fund now is zero.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Okay. SML's Statutory Mortgage Recovery Trust Fund report is on page 20 and 21. As you can note on the chart under claim payment history, there have been two payments made out of that fund during fiscal year 17 to date.
So. All right. Do I hear a motion that the Finance Commission approve the agency's May 31st, 2017 investment officer reports?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor? Please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes. Okay. Next, we have a discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Texas Department of Banking's 2017 annual internal audit report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, Audit Committee members. I'm Kim Lopez-Gonzalez with Garza Gonzalez and Associates, and also in the audience is Renee Gonzalez. And we are here this morning to present to you the annual report for the Department of Banking for the fiscal year ended August 31st, 2017, which you should have in your packet starting on page 23. As you are aware, the state agencies are required to have the not only audits, but also prepare an annual audit report, and that it be submitted to the various agencies by November 1st of 2017. On page 25 of this report, this is our report to you. This indicates what is included in this report, in the annual report. What is included in the report is our audit of the bank examinations area, and also the follow-up that we performed from the last year's audits that where there were findings that may have not been fully implemented, so we also performed a follow-up of that. And on page 26 of the report, at the bottom of that page, it has a summary of the 2017 internal audit plan for the Department of Banking, which was dated January 25th, 2017, and approved by this board, this committee, on February 17th of 2017. If you'll notice there that the four items that are listed is the bank examinations, which is included in this report, the fixed asset management, which was already presented at your June meeting, and then the follow-up, which is also included in this report. This report not only includes that, but also meets the requirements of the annual internal auditing requirements, as required by the state auditor's office. On page 30 of your report, well, it includes a number of things in here that's required by the state auditor's office, but on page 30, it begins with the bank examination's background, and I don't plan to go through everything, but I just wanted to highlight some of the information that's included in the background. On page 30, under item number 5, there is an item identified as systems and the examination tool suite system ETS. That's what it stands for. Just wanted to bring that to your attention, that that was a new system that was implemented during fiscal year 2017. On page 31 of your report, at the bottom of that page, as of April 30th, 2017, which was the cutoff period for our audit, there were 240 banks under DOB supervision, and there are some composite ratings of 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and the number of banks which fall into those categories are listed there as well as of April 30th, 2017, and with most of them being in composite rating number 1. On page 32 of your report, as of April 30th, 2017, the division issued a total of 59 report of examinations. And on pages 33 and 34, this is our audit objective, scope, and methodology, as well as the procedures that we perform to complete this audit. That is listed on those pages. And I'd like to direct your attention now to page 35. This is a summary of observations and findings and the ratings that we have applied to any of the findings that have resulted from this audit. There was one, which is work paper documentation, and based on the nature of the finding as related to the objective of our audit, the rating that we have assigned to it is a low. And on page 36 of the report, that is the detailed finding, recommendation, and management's response. Based on our discussions with management, they have included the response here. They agree with that recommendation, with the finding, with the recommendation, and as of it, at effective September 1st, 2017, they expect to implement a change in their policy. In addition, as I indicated before, in addition to the audit that we performed, we also performed follow-up procedures to last year's, which is included on pages 37 and 38 of your report. There were a total of 6 comments and recommendations that we followed up on. There were 5 of them that were fully implemented and 1 that the agency plans not to implement, which is on page 38 of your report. And that has to do with the records retention schedule, where we had recommended last year where there are some record series that are not being used, and we had just recommended that for more of a cleanup purposes for that schedule, that they consider removing them. But based on when they went back to review it, they indicated that they don't feel that that is necessary because removing items that may come back, that may be required later on, they thought that was a more efficient approach just to leave them in there. So we're okay with that too. In addition to that, what's also included in your report on page 41 is our history of areas audited. This was something that was requested that we include in every report that we're issuing to you. This lists the number of potential audit topics and the last time that they were audited from 2007 to 2016. And I believe U.S. commissioners wanted to see that to just kind of give you an idea of what's been looked at to proceed with the following year. And if you have any questions at this time, I'd be happy to answer them.
And as much as the record retention, does it coincide, or how much does it exceed with the reg requires in terms of record retention?
We didn't find a lot of series that were included that weren't being used, but there were, I can't even begin to tell you a number, but it wasn't excessive. I don't know if anybody from DOB may want to answer that.
After the, I guess, hopefully you'll agree with this, most of these things are where there's something that has not occurred for a while, or a long time. They thought we ought to delete that, but we felt like that having it there, it could reoccur. It may not reoccur, but we felt like we needed to have that there. We can always say NA as opposed to dropping it, and then if it comes back, we may forget that it's there. I don't recall. I've got 10 items here on my list. like legislative appropriations request. Well, you know, we're not under appropriations right now, but we, and we're not, not going to say anything else about that. reports, the Finance Commission could ask us to do reports. Well, we haven't had any in a while, but there could be one tomorrow. So it's just kind of best to, we think it's best to have it on there. The recommendation is a valid recommendation, but we're trying to be a little bit over conservative or cautious, maybe.
Very well.
In addition to that, Madam Chair, I did want to indicate, as usual, we did have full cooperation with all staff that was that we dealt with as part of the audit, and no scope restrictions.
Okay, great. Any other comments?
No.
Okay.
Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Texas Department of Banking's 2017 annual internal audit report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Hector? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes. Discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner's 2017 annual internal audit report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates.
Thank you. And again, in your packet, you do have, beginning on page 43, the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner annual internal audit report for fiscal year 2017. On page 45 of that report, this is our report to you, indicating the two audits that were performed. And also, in addition to that, as for the Department of Banking, we did also perform a follow-up of the prior year comments and recommendations, which the status is included in this report. On page 46 of the report, 2017 internal audit plan summary is also included, which lists the functions that we were authorized to perform during this time period, which is the TIFI fund, the registration, the follow-up, and any other tasks, which we were not assigned any other task in addition to those. The first audit that we have listed here is on page 50. It is the TIFI fund. It really wasn't a full-blown TIFI fund audit. It was the review of the administration of the investment portfolio of that fund. And just to summarize a little bit of that information on page 50, the first paragraph under background, we do indicate here, we give you a little bit of background, which is not new to you, the TIFI fund, but because of the functions that we performed as part of this audit, I did want to bring to your attention that, you know, OCCC did establish the TIFI fund as they were required to do so, and it is with the Texas Treasury State Safekeeping Trust Company, which is a corporation created by the Comptroller's Office. Down below the mid page under the TIFI fund, just to bring to your attention also that of the $800 annual assessment fee collected from the CABS, $200 is designated for the TIFI fund and segregated in the OCC's accounting system. There is an interest-bearing cash equivalent account in their general ledger, and there also is an investment account in their general ledger to separate the two amounts as to agree with the reports that they get from the TTSTC. On page 51 of your audit, for the 6 months ended February 28, 2017, there was one transfer made to the TIFI, out of the TIFI fund's cash equivalent account into the TIFI fund's endowment program account, which is their investment account. So that is the, as of the cutoff period for our audit, $650,000 was transferred to investments out of the cash interest-bearing accounts. And right below on page 51, well, actually, let me draw your attention to the second paragraph there, that there is the pro rata ownership of this TIFI fund, of the TIFI fund within this whole pool, is a very small percentage of the entire pool. It's 0.053% of the total TTSTC endowment fund balance. So that is what the balance that the TIFI fund represents of that pool. And under the investment policy and procedures, OCC's investment policy states that OCCC has adopted TTSTC's endowment policy for the management and oversight of the TIFI fund's investments. So when it's decided that cash is moved to investments, the TTSTC does decide on the type of investments that those monies will be invested in. And I know, Ms. Commissioner Curl, you did have a question on that, you know, how do you know what exactly type of investments are being used? Like for that $650,000, when it's invested, when it's moved from cash to investments, I personally didn't see a report because we had the same question on, okay, so of the $650,000, we're going to invest it in repurchase, in the alternative investments and equity type of investments and government securities. Commissioner Pettyjohn, I don't know that you, if you can say anything different about that, but I didn't see that you could really see that. You could just see like there's a balance of market value, there's gains, there's losses, and then you have an ending balance. For reasonableness, like if you look at page 52, mm-hmm. on there's a table there for the balances from the cash account to the invest and the investment, the different investment accounts. And you can see at August 31st, 2016, the total amount is $2,042,000. At February 28, 2017, there's $2,830,000. There was an invest, there was a movement of $650,000 from that, an investment of $650,000. So, you know, you can see that it did increase by that amount, but you can't really identify where that $650,000 actually was invested.
Right.
Did you want to speak to that, Leslie?
I don't really have anything to add to that at the moment. I'll talk about some of that later, but yeah. Go ahead.
And on page 52, that's the page that you were on, right underneath, in addition to investments, there are disbursements made for the purpose of that the fund was set up for those grants. During the period that we looked at, as of February 28, 2017, there were 7 disbursements made. And then in March of 2017, there were 8 disbursements made. I know that we said the cutoff was February 28, 2017, but since we got the information through March, we went ahead and extended our procedures to that point for disbursements.
Pardon me. Ms. Garza, let's go back to this chart. I feel you were expressing concern. Maybe I was misreading what you were saying.
I don't know that it is a concern, but I guess just for our purposes, when we were looking at what the amounts were being invested in, we did have a question on, can you identify where the money's, like what type of investments they were invested in? But because it's a pool, and you all may be familiar with this too, like with a text pool, with the pools, you can't really segregate each participant's investment.
Gotcha,
by, because it's a pool.
But
so
there's no question the money went there.
No.
Okay,
I don't have a question about this.
And we get annually we get sort of a full breakdown of where
they're in control,
where the pool assets are,
and
our 0.053% of that pool.
She probably went further into it because I asked the question before the meeting as to how do you trace the money that went in and where it went, because when we get the reports, when we got the report that particular month where the money went in, it just showed beginning market value, ending market value, and it didn't show the breakdown. And it just strikes me odd, but I get everyone says the same thing. It's so small that they don't track it like that, which to me seems a bit odd, but.
Well, you're turning your funds over to this other agency essentially, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and so.
Yes, that's why I wanted to draw your attention also to where the investment policy does indicate that you are kind of turning over the management and oversight of those investments to the TTST to follow under that endowment policy. But I believe on a biennial basis, this body is reviewing that.
And they come present to us.
Right, to ensure that you are okay with and that they are in alignment with what your investment policy is. On pages 52 to 54, this outlines our audit objective, scope, methodology, and procedures performed. And before I get into the registration area, I'd like to just so that we can keep with the TIFI fund audit, if you would turn to page 60, so that we can cover the two comments and recommendations that we have related to that audit. The first one being the TIFI cash equivalent account reconciliation. During the 6 months that we reviewed, there were 4 instances where the reconciliations were completed 2 or more months after the respective month end. That was due to some, I believe, staff shortages. and management's response is included in here. They do agree with the recommendation, and the way it, what it reads here is that they will amend their policy to ensure that it is done more timely. Under number two, the TIFI grant program disbursements, we did review a number of disbursements, and we did find one instance where there was a payment for an alcoholic beverage, very minimal amount, but OCCC did agree with the recommendation, and actually they have already received a reimbursement from that agency. And if you don't have any further questions, or if you do have any questions on that TIFI fund, I'd be happy to answer them at this time before I get into the registration audit.
It's been a light drinker.
$5. $5.
Audit mine.
$5. What can you get for $5?
I know.
On page 55 of the of your report, that's the background of the registration audit, the second audit that we performed for the fiscal year 2017. There are four different types of registrants, being the debt management service providers, the registered creditors, the refund application loan facilitators, and the crafted precious metal dealers. Which the crafted metal dealers, if you look on page 56, that's a little different, a little quirky, I think, just because the applications are submitted through the Texas Department of Public Safety, but they are still registered by OCCC.
Yeah.
So I think that's a little
different.
That will
only happen for a short period of time longer because it will have to be moved. We're going to have to move that internally.
Okay, so it is moving back to OCCC?
Yeah.
Or I don't know about moving back, but moving to?
Moving to us, yeah.
And so on page 57 of your report, this gives you a summary of the activity that occurred during September 1st, 2016 through February 28, 2017. It has the number of new applications, number of renewal applications, the total applications received, and the fees collected. On pages 57 through 58, this gives you the audit objective, scope, and methodology, procedures performed as part of the audit. And back to page 60, we do have one comment and recommendation related to the audit having to do with the performance measures and the way that it was being computed. Management's response is included in here. They do agree with the recommendation, and they will begin to compute it based on their definition.
Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. Let me go back to page 57, the chart. I never understand charts. The third item down, refund anticipation loan facility. Somebody explain to me what that is.
I'll take a crack at that. So these are service providers that typically do tax preparation, but they offer an advance on someone's tax refund. And so in order to offer that advance, they register to do that because it's
and
a financial service.
And that's the name you've given them? That is what you call that type of business?
Yeah, the refund anticipation loan facilitators are facilitating a loan on the anticipation of a refund from the IRS.
Makes all the sense in the world. Thank you.
Uh-huh. They've been registered with us since 2007, I believe.
And on pages 62 through 63 of your report, this is the result of the follow-up that we performed from 2016. There were four items that we followed up on. Three were fully implemented, and one is ongoing. And that is on page 62, item number three, that is a continuation. And I believe that was covered also when Leslie gave her status on those findings. I mean, on the audit status. So we will continue to follow up that for in the fiscal year 2018 and come back to you with the status of that as of that date. In addition to that, on page 22 of your report, this also includes the history of the areas audited for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner from 2007 through 2016. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have on this report at this time.
Okay, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner's 2017 Annual Internal Audit Report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Hector, we got a trend going here. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Oppose? The ayes have it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pearl.
Thank you.
And also, I did fail to mention that as I did for the DOB audit, we had full cooperation as well. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay, next we have discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's 2017 third quarter financial statements.
Thank you, Manager. I'd like to call on Christina Hoyer. I hope to provide a report on the third quarter financial statements.
Thank you, Commissioner Pettyjohn. Our third quarter operating statement is found on page 67. Our revenues are at 105.9% of the third quarter operating budgeted amount. Our expenditures are 91.4% of the third quarter budgeted amount. Salary and wages are at 93.4% due to the suspended hiring of vacant positions. Travel is at 86.1% of budget, also due to the suspended hiring of vacant positions and some efficiencies for enterprise level exams. Other operating expenditures is forecasted to be under budget for the year, and development in progress and IT project is forecasted to be over budget for the year. A slight delay in the project at the end of fiscal year 16 pushed one phase of the project into fiscal year 17, which will increase the development in progress costs that will have been incurred in fiscal year 16. The delay in development will cause a later completion date, which meant that the move into the maintenance phase of the contract happened later in fiscal year 17 rather than the earlier as planned. This delay causes a reduction in maintenance costs for fiscal year 17, which are classified as other operating expenditures. The changes in cash balance report is on page 69. At the end of the third quarter, the agency had assigned cash balance for future operations at 3.9%.
3.9 months,
thank you. Any questions?
May I? Mm-hmm. Okay, page 67, expenditures. Can you explain to me what benefit replacement pay is and what longevity is?
Longevity includes benefit replacement pay and longevity for employees who, as long as they've been here, they get $20. And for every 2 years, it increases by $20. And benefit replacement pay
Wait. So let's stop right there. So you're saying $20 per what?
Per every 2 years. So
$20 a month.
Per month, month. Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
So if I've been here 10 years, I'm going to get $200 a month
you
more?
Get,
or whatever.
You get 100.
Whatever that math is.
Sorry.
Yeah. And that's in addition to whatever
salary. Base rate of pay.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yep. It's just a tenure kind of
yes.
reward. Small.
Yes.
And then what's the benefit replacement pay?
I'll take a crack at this.
That's a long time. Yeah, that's long. Yeah, that's
it's a historical amount. There's several employees that are grandfathered in. I don't remember the exact date, but somebody in the audience may know the exact date by which employees beyond a certain level received a certain type of pay that was meant to help replace, it was a replacement of the cost associated with certain benefits that employees now had to pay. Those are only a certain number of grandfathered employees. We have a small number of those employees that still receive that. It's about $1,000 or $1,100 or something a year, I think.
It was Social Security.
Social Security replacement.
The state used to pay a percentage of the portion of Social Security. Mm-hmm. And when that was
any other questions? Thank you.
Okay, Madam Chair, on page 70 is Texas Department of Banking. Sammy Chadley, I'd like you to come forward and go over the results.
Good morning, Sammy Chadley. On page 70 is our operating statement for third quarter. And during that time, we show that our revenues are at 108% of budget. 101.8% of budget, and our expenditures are at 92.6% of budget. On page 71 is our overview of budget variances for the third quarter for FY17. And I'm going to go over two items. The first one, non-bank regulation, where our actual revenues were in excess of budget due to unanticipated collected penalties from unlicensed money service businesses and prepaid funeral contract permit holders. And also, we had a higher than anticipated MSB examination and travel fee reimbursements. The year-to-date non-bank regulation is at 105.8%, and that variance will be offset in the fourth quarter because there will be some forgiven assessments. The next item is other operating, and we do have a positive variance that is due to targeted examination where we use our own resources as opposed to using State of Michigan contract examiners. Any questions so far? On page 72 is our cash flow statement, and it shows that our cash reserves are at 4.11 months. These reserves will be lower next quarter as bank and trust and special audit assessments to be forgiven will be approximately $3.5 million. Okay. Any questions?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thanks,
Amy.
Sure.
Okay, I'll call on Antonia Amtal to present SML's financial information.
Good morning, Antonia Antop, Savings and Mortgage Lending. Our report begins on page 73. This is our third quarter financials. I have listed the variances on page 74. Our revenues are at 19% over budget, and more than half of that is due to collective penalties that were not budgeted for. And the expenditures are 8% under budget. We have added a line for the SAO audit fee that was not budgeted for, $50,000. We have already paid that. I'll be happy to answer any questions on that. On page 75 is our cash balance statement. We are currently at 12 months, which is less than last quarter. We were over 13 months, and we expect that to go down further in the fourth quarter because we will be collecting no thrift assessments. And the charts related to the cash reserve are on page 76. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thanks.
Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2017 third quarter financial statements?
So moved.
Second.
Hector, Lori. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. Motion carries. Next, we have the discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's fiscal year 2018 operating budgets. Commissioner Pettijohn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So on Monday of this week, we had a budget hearing, and the three agencies presented their budgets, and we put through a fairly lengthy presentation on those budgets. And we're very grateful for all the participation we had, stakeholders that came, and folks that were interested in our budgets. We're going to try to do a shortened version of the presentation this morning. So, Christine, if you want to come on up to the table, I'll start with the budget for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner, and then Christine's going to pick up about midway through. But the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner is pleased to present its proposed budget in the amount of $9,408,307 for fiscal year 18. The budget request is for 91 FTEs, which is a slight reduction in the current authorized level of 93.5. The proposed budget amounts to a 2.75% decrease over our budgeted amount from fiscal year 17. Key budget drivers for our proposed 18 budget continue to be the many industry market adjustments, our maintaining a stable staff, our staffing stability, our examination travel requirements, and then our IT and security needs. I'll just quickly say something about industry market adjustments. As we report on these meeting to meeting, Key industries under our purview continue to show dynamic changes. There's a fair amount of turnover within the industry. However, our overall number of licenses continues to hold fairly constant. Some markets are still showing some are showing growth. That's not still. I mean, they're showing growth, and that's good. Some were showing a little contraction. But our FY18 budget is based on an overall conservatively estimated modest growth of our licensed market participants of 2.4%, which we think is consistent with a lot of with the economic outlook for the state, for the nation. We obviously want to proceed carefully, make sure we right-size our workforce to our regulated population. The modeling that we've done based on this proposed budget would allow us to perform 4,200 compliance examinations, which is it's higher than our forecast from last year, not quite as high as our current level experience, but we think that's the right amount for the type of work that we've forecasted that needs to be done next year. Certainly contemplates the effects of continued and enhanced training for our staff, our targeted enterprise level exams, and our continued adoption of our new IT examination tool and that effect on overall production. In terms of the effect on the industry, our proposed budget anticipates, again, discounts from the maximum assessment rates, as we've been able to do for a number of years. This anticipates in the regulated lending area a 15% discount, in the pawn shop area a 10% discount, motor vehicle sales finance a 15% discount. Those are fairly consistent with the discounts that were provided in the last fiscal year. And we will further discount these or further adjust these discounts, increase them perhaps by any penalty amounts that we receive that would offset any revenue requirements for a respective industry or any major swings in growth or decline in regulated populations. Our credit access business and property tax groups continue as previous, and that has proved to be the appropriate amount of revenue for the work that's required in those groups. We've evaluated our revenue requirements across the various market segments in relationship to our resource requirements for each segment, and we believe the proposed budget fairly allocates the resources among the market segments. I've really already mentioned comments on our staffing plan. Our salaries and associated personal benefits in this proposed budget amount to 80% of our total budget, so it's heavily driven, of course, by staff. This budget would fund our examiner career ladder with 8 planned promotions in the FE1 to FE3 range, and then other competitive actions that would be designed for retention and enhanced tenure. I'll make one more comment on IT, and then I'm going to let Christina pick it up. The proposed budget funds the maintenance for our new ACE project that we've just completed, which modernized, of course, created our exam tool, created our complaint portal, and modernized annual reporting. And it also will include funding for one more project, which is to bring over the crafted precious metal registration from DPS to ALEKS. And then it will also provide for additional enhancements to IT security. And then, Christina, I'll turn it over to you to pick up some
Leslie,
other
can
items.
I ask you a question, please?
Sure.
So I think I remember that some time ago, CSAT submitted some filing which suggested that there was the potential for a dramatic reduction in the number of cabs because of some federal action.
Yes.
Can you give us an update on the thought process about whether or not that continues to be a possibility?
That continues to be a possibility. That continues to be a concern. Our expectation, we've continued to see, we saw about a 7% decrease in cabs in fiscal year 17. We're forecasting an 8 to 9% decrease across this fiscal year. We're continuing to see between that. I think there's federal action. There's also been an increased action at the local level, which is overall, we're seeing some consolidation in that industry as well. So we are certainly forecasting a decrease. The federal action is certainly potentially on the horizon. I've even read news articles about it potentially, yesterday as possibly coming. So we believe that our budget will allow us to be adaptable and flexible to that, but we are projecting a decline in that area. Okay,
Leslie,
Christina.
Oh. Leslie, 80% of your budget staff, is that correct?
80%.
80% is?
80% salary and wages and benefits.
And what is the proposed level of increase this year?
The increase?
Standard living.
We do not give standard of living adjustments. There are adjustments that are awarded based on performance, and we do have career ladders that we fund based upon progress through career ladders.
Do you have a budget amount of salary increase over last year for the same number of employees?
The budgeted increase, you'll see, is there's actually, some of this is based because we've had so many vacant positions for a while. There's actually, from the amount we budgeted in the fiscal year 17 budget versus the amount that's budgeted in fiscal year 18, is a 1% decrease of the total aggregate amount.
Yeah, I guess I'm still asking my question correctly. You're bound to have an amount budgeted for those performance increases.
There is the amount for the particular career ladder, and then there's a 2% there's a 2% amount that can be used there's a number of things that can, I mean, there's certain positions that we may have to fill in a particular area, so it's potentially for that. It depends. Sometimes you need it when you're trying to recruit someone, so it's available for that, but it also could be used for some of those other kind of adjustments that might need to be made for existing staff.
Maybe to address your question, the cost of living increase, the last time that I recall that was the legislature in 15 doing the 2.5% increase.
Mm-hmm. So they would determine, and we would pass that on.
That was for all state employees.
We have done that, yes. Okay. When they do classify, okay. Maybe I didn't. Thank you. I didn't understand that was a question. Okay. Okay, Christina.
Okay. For other key items in the expenditure budget include travel expenditures for non-out-of-state examination travel, which are estimated at $797,000. This is a decrease in the travel budget of 13%. From the prior year travel budget based upon current year experience and efficiencies, which are reduced travel costs. Professional fees are estimated at $403,000, which is an increase of 37% over the fiscal year 17 budget amount and includes an estimated amount of $55,000 for the sunset review. Other operating expenses are budgeted at $472,083. Which is a budgeted decrease of 8% over the fiscal year 17 budget. Larger items within the classification include online payment fees and IT maintenance costs. Benefits are estimated at approximately $1,967,000, which is an increase of 11% over estimated expenditures from fiscal year 17. The projected amount is forecasted based upon an estimated personal cost and benefit factor of 31.65%. Anticipated health insurance premium increases for fiscal year 18 and the retiree insurance costs. Capital expenditures consist primarily of computers and IT technology hardware that are part of the agency regular replacement schedule. For fund balance, the budget proposes a deficit of revenues over expenditures deliberately to cover some projected spending from reserve funds. The agency anticipates a 5.8 monthly cash balance for operating expenses at the end of fiscal year 17.
Any other questions? Charles?
Did you tell me? Hey, I had questions.
All right, on page 78, Department of Banking's budget. Stephanie, if you'll come forward. I'd like to make a few opening comments, though. As all the other agencies, our biggest expenditure is the salary component compensation. And we have started, I guess, probably since I've been here, our goal is to be at 90% of the FDIC for our examining staff. That changes somewhat every year, so we keep up with that and try to make our adjustments. Now, why 90%? Is that just the way we came up with it? I will tell you that the 90% doesn't even get close to 90% because the FDIC has a locale adjustment for each area that they're in. For instance, in Dallas, the locale adjustment is 18%. So our people in Dallas make substantially below the FDIC. But for instance, I believe the locale adjustment for Austin is 3%. Pardon me?
6%.
Okay, and then Lubbock is 6.5%. There's no other state agency that does a locale adjustment like that. So the DPS does something, but they call it a hazardous duty pay. So maybe we should do that. I'm not sure. But I want you to understand that that's the goal that we're shooting at. In some cases, our group, because of various things, may get to 92% or 93%, but we're forecasting trying to get to 90%. And some of them last year, the question was on some of our more senior people, they were below the 90%, and we're doing step ups. We didn't feel like we should go up 10% in one year, so we're doing step ups for that group, and this budget includes that also. And we can talk about when we get into the Finance Commission package about our resignations and where we are as to whether this 90% is appropriate, but that's the goal that we're using. Y'all should have received or did receive indication that at the end of going into the third quarter, the fourth quarter, we normally forgive on the bank side assessments. So we use that to balance our budget. If we don't use the money, then we don't spend the money. So that's, we have a history of doing that, I think, as so have the other agencies also. It is a, but I will tell you that going through the budget is very, very, very tough. Stephanie is a hard taskmaster. She challenges everybody's assumptions, and I think the process works very well. On the special audit side, some of the assessments were forgiven primarily because we were able, well, we're not able, but we did have some fines and penalties that we used to offset our overhead, and those weren't in the budget. So with that, Stephanie, if you'll go over the details.
All right. As Charles says, ours is on page 78. Our budget is based on the department conducting 863 exams and processing approximately 300 applications, notices, and filings. The 2018 budget has revenues projected at $28.7 million, and this is net of $1.5 million in assessments that we will forgive. The assessment reductions will allow the agency to cover our expected expenditures of $28.69 million with no additional contribution to our cash balance in 2018. Assessments account for 88% of our revenues. The revenue projections that we use included minimal asset growth in our banking side, a nominal level of problem banks, and we did incorporate the inflation factor of 1.96. The inflation factor was a rule that you approved, I think, about a year ago. In corporate activity, we see that declining slightly, roughly 10%, due to fewer MSB and bank filings. Trust assets, budgeted as remaining relatively constant, as well as the special audits assets. And we do see a 20% reduction in foreign bank assessments due to one large institution moving their assets from Texas. Our 2018 budget has our expenditures being 1.89% greater than the 2017 budget. Salaries are at $18.5 million, employee benefits at $5.6 million, and these account for 84% of our budget request. And this is approximately the same percentage as last year. The staffing plan, as you will see, or the number of FTEs is decreased by two. The Bank and Trust staffing plan came out with two less employees, so we have eliminated two. So our staffing request is 190 employees. 48 of those being admin staff and 142 in the examination and related director series.
While you see a decrease in FTEs, we are still increasing the overall salary numbers from 2017 budget and from 2017 actual. This is mainly due to, one, we filled in all the vacancies that we had in 2017. Nine of those were specialty positions that remained unfilled throughout the entire year. But we believe if we were able to find the people, we want the flexibility to hire them. This alone accounts for $662,000 of the budget. The budget also proposes 50 career ladder promotions in the FE1 to FE6 series. These are mostly non-competitive. 8 promotions and equity adjustments in our administrative area, and equity salary adjustments that Charles spoke to related to the FDIC comparisons for 26 members of our FE4 and 6 series, and 60 staff members in our FE7 through to director series. Those adjustments themselves account for $547,000. We believe that these increases are necessary to retain our staff and help build our tenure with individuals, and hope that people can make the DOB a lifelong career choice. Today, 64% of our financial examiners are commissioned, which moves us closer to our optimal staffing level, our staffing plan of 67% of our examiners being commissioned. The other large salary items, or the other salary items that we have, is we have 7 lump sum tenured employees that we project will retire in 2018, so it's almost $300,000 that we will pay out in the vacation accruals. And then our travel stipend and the longevity is about $200,000 for our agency that you asked about earlier. Our next largest item is travel, which is estimated at $2.3 million and is 8% of our total expenditures. Travel is hard to compare from year to year because you actually have to look at the examination schedule, the number of people, whether there are going to be commutes or stay-outs, whether they're going to be in-state or out-of-state. And so we go through the entire scenario with every division and every region to come up with the actual travel that we think we're going to do for the examinations and for training. So the only significant differences in the travel, or the only real differences in the travel from the 17 budget to now, is that we do have a staff conference scheduled for 2018, and that's about $120,000. And on the out-of-state side, there's a change in how CSBS is billing us for classes beginning in 18. Historically, the tuition included the lodging, and it will no longer it will be separate beginning in 18, so we will have a difference in how we calculate travel for and training beginning in 18. A couple of other items worth noting. Professional fees looks like it takes a really large increase. The biggest item there is the sunset review that we have in at $117,000. Consumable supplies also looks like it goes up a great deal because our 4-year replacement cycle for computers show that we'll replace 83 computers this year as compared to 40 in 2017. Training I already talked about a little bit. It's truly based on the needs of the examiners, and it's also predicated on some classes are just so much more expensive than other classes. And in there, though, we are requesting fewer classes in 18 than we did in 17. In our claims category, that looks like it increases substantially. It's because we have put in a possible unemployment claim. And our capital budget decreases because in this budget cycle, we only are replacing 4 servers. We believe at the end of throughout 2018, our unreserved cash balance will be about $9 million, and this will be 3.8% of the 2018 budgeted expenditures. And the only other thing I'd like to do is, our budget process, I want to thank Krishna Jones and Sammy Chadley. While everybody was involved, they are the two that do the lion's share of pulling it all together and getting it to me, and I really appreciate all the work they did.
Stephanie, it looks to me like we continue to see the number of institutions on the bank side that we regulate diminish. And I think the number when I got here was over 300, and we're now at 240-ish. Help us understand how, the number of institutions diminishing affects your budget.
Well, I'll try a little bit, and then Bob and Charles are much more the experts. But while the number decreases, the assets continue to grow. So the assets under our control and what we are examining continues to increase. And so it really doesn't decrease your budget at all from that perspective.
Does the number of branches have any effect?
No.
I knew you were going to ask that question.
He actually sent me an email, so Paul asked this question.
I said, Paul's going to ask this question.
Bob, introduce yourself for the
Bob record. Bacon, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Banking. It's true.
Try not to be so predictable.
After so many years, it's very predictable. Unfortunately, we don't have a one-on-one corresponding decrease in staff as the banks decrease. A lot of those have consolidated with our other institutions. We as examiners also have regulatory burden, okay? And so the procedures that we're doing, the enhanced due diligence that we're asking, let's say concentration risk is a good example. We're asking banks, and banks are doing a lot more analysis when they have that type of risk on their portfolio. So it's taking more time. We continually update our procedures. So it's not a strictly, you know, we lose these 10 banks, it took this many hours, we're going to reduce it, because we're going to end up adding more hours on some of the other banks, whether they increased or not, just because of our examination procedures. The other thing which takes a big part of our time is the large banks. So we do joint with either the FDIC and mainly the Federal Reserve. We would like to do at least a 50-50. And it's kind of hard to really estimate, I'll be honest with you, because sometimes I think the Fed overstaffs some of those exams because they just have extra people. So it's kind of a moving target on ours. But I would say we're probably on average around 40% contribution of the time needed to do those. And so we need to really bump that up a little bit as we have more experienced people come along. So we're taking those that have gained experience in the field and we're putting them more into the large bank exam target reviews, as we call them on the thing. So we're able to decrease the FTE count too this time, and I think we can still get our job done. Another good example is like the offsite monitoring that was done on the oil and gas industry over the last 2 years. We did a lot with the FDIC, mainly we were joining them, conducted off-site reviews that don't get counted as an exam. So it's extra time that we're taking people out in the field to look at the concentration risk is out there. So it's not a strict numbers game. Like I said, we decrease by 10, then we're going to be able to decrease FTEs by this number. We've got to look at the composition of the banks, the complexity of the exams, and see what else we have to do as the dynamics change in the industry. That kind of answers your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Sure. And I also noticed a ratio in somewhere in the packet where it said number of assets and it said number of examiners. So I could tell that the budget was somewhat relayed on the total dollar of assets that are under.
Right. And they continue to increase.
Right. Right.
Yes, and we'll see when we get into the Finance Commission package that all the number, the asset number, as Bob says, has increased. And our banks have primarily been the winners of the consolidation. So, and we and again, we'll see that we still have conversions. And so, but if we continue to have community banks being acquired at the pace that we're under now, not only in Texas, but nationwide, this will become an issue. Mm-hmm. As right now, I would say we're neutral. We're plateaued, if you will. So it'll either grow or it'll diminish. And we think we're poised to be able to go either way.
I'm going to change subjects. Phrase you used earlier that I'm trying to catch up on. You said something about forgiveness of assessments or something of that nature. Could you explain that to me?
Well, Bob, you want to do that on the bank side?
Well, statutory, you know, we only collect what we spend, and so our assessments are quarterly, and so when we get to the fourth quarter, then Stephanie, we budget the expenses for the end of the year. And if it looks like that we're going to have a surplus, then we reduce that fourth quarter assessment.
And that's the fee we charge the entity.
It's based statutorily. We charge institutions each quarter.
So it's based on their asset size multiplied by a certain factor, and it comes up to what the assessment is for each institution.
So, jumping forward, how do we accumulate money to buy a building? To build a building.
Well, like in this budget, in this fiscal year, we forgave $3.5 million in assessments. If we were trying to build up a reserve, we would not have forgiven that amount, and we would have put it in our building reserve.
There's also a provision that the Finance Commission can approve a special assessment for a if you needed to for a building. So that's already in the rules.
And our building fund is already built for our acquisition, so they're not needing to budget for that.
I just figure every year that goes by,
we do add to it.
FDIC doesn't, well.
Man, we got too many conversations going. Would you respect your question?
When the insurance fund gets to a certain amount, then I don't know if it's Congress or by statute.
It's by statute.
Then they will quit charging the banks or reduce it on the banks. But it's a certain percentage that they have to keep the fund at.
And on the building, we came up with the number that we would all try to reach, and we're there, and we're gonna stay at that point until we decide that it's not enough, or we use the money, and we'll talk about the building later on.
That's pretty much what I just said.
So, no, I was trying to answer him when the two conversations were going.
Any other questions?
Stephanie, are you complete?
Are you done?
You done?
Oh, I got all kinds of other numbers.
Okay, you mentioned the sunset fee of $117,000.
She did?
Yes.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. All right, thank
okay.
you.
Okay, let's be as entertaining.
SML's budget is on page 79, and Antonio will present the detailed budget. I do have some opening comments I want to make. As we developed the budget, we used a process that, of course, followed our policy and results in a proposed budget, which takes into account the agency's vision, mission, short, and long-term goals. It includes budget decisions targeting specific results and outcomes. It provides incentives to employees, promotes staff wellness and staff development, and includes input from the entire management team as well as other staff as needed. The proposed budget for fiscal year 18 provides for a 6.2% increase in revenue and a 3.8% increase of expenditures compared to the fiscal year 2017 budget. The proposed FTE count is 61, which is the same as the FTE number approved for fiscal year 17. And at the end of fiscal year 18, we expect to have a deficit of $966,000 that will be covered by existing cash reserves. And with that, I'll turn it over to Antonia.
Thank you. The licensing revenues we budget is 8% lower than prior year actual revenues collected. In fiscal year 18, we're discounting our mortgage banker and mortgage servicer registration fees between 11 and 13%. The renewal fee for a new residential mortgage loan originator license will be discounted 20% from $250 to $200. Our license fees remain some of the lowest in the country. For 5 years in a row, we have waived 100% of the fourth quarter thrift assessments, and this year we have budgeted to do the same. We expect that the collected thrift assessments will be 8% over the actual collected for 17 due to expected growth in some of the markets that our savings banks operate, resulting in asset size growth. During fiscal year 18, we are budgeting 0% penalty so that no part of our operating budget hinges on the amount of assessed and collected penalties. We expect an increase in the depositor interest received from Safekeeping Trust over prior year budget amounts based on actual amounts received during fiscal year 17. Our salaries and wages category represents 66% of the total expenditure budget. Amounts budgeted for salaries are 2.1% higher than budgeted for last year due to provided merit increases and promotions for multiple employees. In an effort to reward good performance, remain competitive with state and federal counterparts, and encourage staff retention. The stability of our staff benefits the industry in both retained knowledge of departmental statutes, rules, and procedures, and also of specific regulated entities and their management. Our professional fees and services amount is 102% higher than prior year because it includes an estimated $60,000 fee that we will pay to the Sunset Commission for the Sunset Review that we will be going through during fiscal year 18. Our other operating expenditures have been budgeted at 37% or almost $100,000 higher than last year. This expenditure category is very broad and includes multiple lines of operating expenditures. The increase can be attributed to the following. Operating system upgrade for all employees to Microsoft Office 2016, that's over $21,000. Renewal of our virus protection software with $8,000, that happens once every 3 years. significant schedule replacement of laptops for mortgage examiners and executive staff and other office equipment, $46,000. Upgrade of the phone system managed by the Department of Information Resources that will require us to double our bandwidth and increase some of the monthly fees, $14,000. 85th Legislature authorized the department to obtain criminal history information regarding the department's employees, which will cost $2,000. We have also provided for increases to amounts available for employee training, wellness activities, bank charges paid to Safekeeping Trust, fees paid to Texas Online for processing online payments. The fiscal year 18 employee benefits are increasing 2% in line with 2% increase in payroll costs. We expect that at the end of fiscal year 18, our cash reserves will be, the unreserved cash reserves will be sufficient to cover about 8 months of operating activity. And I'll be happy to provide any details if you have any questions.
Any other questions?
Ask a question. Answer the question about reduced, reduced number of institutions. Yeah, I'll ask it again.
Okay, ask it again. Okay.
Your, the number of institutions have diminished at the Department of Mortgage and Savings and Living. What effect does that have on your budget?
The number, and you'll see this in our materials, the number decreased by two that we've been reporting as in process of converting. That so now we have 26 savings banks. When we had 28 savings banks in our last report, we were regulating $19.6 billion. Now it is $20.6 billion, despite the two leading because of asset growth. And we expect more asset growth from the remaining savings banks. So,
thank you. So if a, I know of a bank in our area that they're a state bank, and then they also have a mortgage lending. So they're regulated by both agencies?
No, if they, a state, well, Charles, do you want to answer about your bank?
Well, if it's a state bank and the they do mortgage lending, we regulate that. If it's a, when we regulate, obviously the ones, if it's a savings bank, they would regulate it. And then if it is a non-bank, then they would regulate it also. And then
okay.
OCC and, regulates some of them.
Right. And so one of the differences being, or the main difference being, that if it's a state savings bank or a thrift industry, thrift institution, they have to have a certain amount of their assets in residential mortgage lending in order to qualify for the charter.
Okay. Thank you.
So, you're welcome.
Any other questions?
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay, next we have a witness registration card, Meredith Fowler. Would you like to address the commission?
Hi, good morning. Meredith Fowler, Legislative Counsel with Independent Bankers Association of Texas. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on behalf of our members of Independent Bankers Association on the proposed budgets for Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending and Department of Banking. We reviewed the proposed budgets for both agencies and submitted letters. They should be hopefully in your packet. After reviewing the proposed budgets, we concluded both agencies continue to operate in an efficient and fiscally conservative manner. We support the merit-based salary increases and employee promotions in the aid of retention of high-quality staff. We also appreciate the relatively fixed staffing level both agencies plan to maintain. We recognize two of the increases are related to employee benefit, health care benefits, increases in those expenses, as well as fees that you guys have to pay to Sunset Commission based on the Sunset review. Our members continue to remain very supportive of self-directed semi-independent status for Finance Commission agencies and the flexibility that status provides the agencies to respond quickly to ever-evolving financial industry services. We sincerely appreciate the work the agencies do to ensure Texas financial services industry operates in a safe and sound manner. That concludes my comments. I'm happy to try and answer any questions.
Any questions? All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And next, the Finance Commission was represented during the budget review process by the Commission's Chairman London. And do you have any comments? I do, and just so that we can keep everything on the budget together, I'll move my comments to here, and then that way we can not have to readdress everything that everybody's already sat through. So with respect to Budget Day, annually, because the Finance Commission is responsible for the budgets of all of the agencies, we hold an annual Budget Day. The goal of that is to present, the three agencies present their budgets, give the public and stakeholders an opportunity to comment, which is a very important part of our process. So the presentation and the testimony is what is done on that day. I understand we had extremely high viewership on our streaming for Budget Day of zero. So I'm so disappointed that people just did not find it view-worthy, but we were all there working. So we could just tell the public we were doing our job. SDSI status is an extremely important component of the budget process. And so for everybody in the room, you realize in the days before we had SDSI, we were up for legislative appropriations, and it was impossible for us to respond effectively and keep our staff. And since we got SDSI in 2009, it came with the privilege of additional responsibility and accountability and transparency, and I think everybody sees that we take that responsibility very seriously. The most important benefit we got from SDSI was our budgetary oversight, thus the budgets you hear about today. And I can't possibly overstate the importance of us being able to react timely to economic changing conditions, to attract qualified, competent, quality personnel at the agencies and not be the training ground for other states and the federal government and poaching, to retain our quality staff and provide them an opportunity to excel in career ladder promotions and commissioned examination, examiner type processes, and to avoid turnover by keeping them, to share the resources with the three agencies being housed together in operational cost savings and efficiencies. And then most importantly, we all know what the technology and IT challenges of today's world are, and we see cybersecurity and financial fraud threatening us on a daily basis, and the agencies are able to react to all of those things because we retain budgetary control. From the standpoint of funding, we're self-funded. All of our regulated entities provide our funding. And the method that we balance our budgets is in reduced assessments and forgiven assessments, where we give our stakeholders their funds back, basically, for funds that we're not using as we manage our budgets prudently. And so when you look at these budgets, you can see that salaries are consistently the largest percent of the budgets, anywhere from 66 to 80%. With respect to reporting, with SDSI, as I mentioned, transparency is just crucial to us and accountability. And all I can say is I feel like there isn't a single meeting where there isn't at least one audit from some agency and somewhere that we're reporting some activity on. And so I think you could see that we take this responsibility seriously. But we also report to the House and the Senate and the Governor's Office and the LBB. I thank Renee and Kim with Garza and Gonzalez for doing a wonderful job being our contracted auditors. And with respect to the state agencies, they're so numerous of who audits us that I can't even list all of the agencies right now. But I would point your attention to the recent SAO audits, the most important example of how well our agencies are performing their intended tasks. With respect to our mission, I know budgets don't seem that exciting and glamorous and important, but just think about the fact that we have an extremely stable, safe and sound financial services environment in Texas that benefits every single Texan. And if I could just draw your mind a little bit back historically to 2008, that is the best living proof of how Texas led by example. 2008 was a financial meltdown, and we were the star performers in that situation. In addition, our budgets focus on financial education and literacy so that we can equip Texans, give them resources, help them make better informed decisions. So all of the agencies take their responsibilities extremely seriously. In the budget process, our stakeholders weigh in. And so you saw some testimony at Budget Day, heard from Meredith with IBAT today, and we receive letters of support from all of our stakeholders. We greatly appreciate their participation in our process. And I want to thank them because they're all very important. With respect to the Department of Banking, it's TBA and it's IBAT, and with respect, which are the two primary stakeholders there. With respect to savings and mortgage lending, TBA, IBAT, TMBA, and the Texas Mortgage Professionals, there are four primary stakeholders, all in support of the budget. And then in OCCC, a myriad of different industries, but TCFA, NCDA, TADA, the Pawn Group, CSAT, Texas Property Tax Lien Holders, five industries, six stakeholder letters, but all in support of the budget. So I feel like when you're approving these budgets, You hear what the agencies need. They only come to us with what they want and what they need to operate prudently. And you hear from the stakeholders that they're doing a good job and what we're doing is the right thing to do. Lastly, let me not forget to thank the agencies themselves, which is Department of Banking, Charles Cooper, and Stephanie Newberg. Thank you. And I guess Sammy also plays an important role in the budget process, as well as at Savings and Mortgage Lending, which is Caroline Jones and Antonia Antoff, which Sorm even noted you in that audit too. Good job there. And then lastly, OCCC, not last but least, which is Leslie Pettijohn and Christina Quaylar. And with that, I'll close my comments.
All right. Great, thank you. Thank you very much. All right, with that, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's fiscal year 2018 operating budgets?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it and the motion passes. Thank you. Next we have a report on activities related to the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund. Commissioner Pettijohn.
Madam Chair, there's a report on page 81. I think the written report can speak for itself in the interest of time, so we'd be happy to answer any questions on that. But we would be ready to move to the next item if you're...
Perfect. Thank you. Next, we have a discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action to approve an amount for the upcoming 2018-19 grant cycle for the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund. Commissioner
Pettijohn. Thank you. There's a report for you on page 83. That provides information and background about the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund, its growth over time, and some historical information about our prior grant funding. And I'll just kind of walk through this just a little bit because I know you haven't seen some of this. Some of you maybe a bit more new information. But the action item that we're looking from the Finance Commission today is to approve an amount for awarding for grants in the 2018-2019 cycle. So the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund began about 5 years ago, and as you've heard, each CAB pays an annual assessment of $200 to support the statewide financial education. If you see the chart in the middle of page 83, you'll see that the Financial Education Endowment Fund has grown to its current balance of roughly $4 million, a little over $4 million as it stands today, and you see the chart breaks down the invested portfolio versus the cash. The cash accounts. So during the first two cycles, the Finance Commission approved grant award amounts that used some litigation proceeds that had been received by the OCCC. And those award amounts were for the first cycle $250,000, for the second amount $249,000. Over the last 5 years, the fund has continued to build with a goal of reaching a level where it's self-sustaining. What level that will be to be self-sustaining, of course, is going to depend upon the desired amount of regular distributions of the fund. The investment policy adopted by the Finance Commission anticipates an earnings distribution from the fund of 3.5% based upon a 20-quarter moving average value of the fund. So when you use those calculations for the distribution that would have been awarded for fiscal year 17 and fiscal year 18, that amount comes to about $128,000. And then there's about $8,800 that is remaining that was unspent from the first two cycles. And so rounding off a little bit, but just solely relying on unspent funds and earnings distributions, the grant cycle for the third grant cycle could support $135,000 in grant awards. So we've, you know, certainly looked at this. We're looking at some fund projections in terms of what happens in the fourth cycle and the fifth cycle. I think, you know, with two more cycles, we'll be very, very, very close. If we proceeded with $135,000 and if the market sort of continues at a reasonable rate, we earn our rates of return that we could distribute 3.5%. In the next cycle, we're probably looking at somewhere of a distribution award amount of $175,000, and then I think in the following cycle, the fund would, you could stop collecting assessments, and the fund could continue to support itself at a $250,000 level, if that's the desired level. I mean, I think that's a big question here. But so we're still sort of in a stabilization mode, a growth and stabilization mode of the fund, but I think it's performed very well. I think we've been able to do some good work with the grant award amounts. In this particular year, it could be a little bit of a reset while we let things continue to grow. But anyway, I wanted to provide this information to the Audit Committee and the Finance Commission and bring this to you. And really, that's what's in front of us now, is to determine what would be an appropriate grant award amount for the next cycle.
Leslie, I have a little bit of concern with us not keeping the grant level at $250,000 that we can give to grantees. I think it's difficult to get people interested in small amounts of money, in my opinion. We need for people, the grantees, to be interested. We need them to be engaged and know that we're going to have a consistent level of funding each year.
Sure.
So for me, I would like the commission to look at possibly taking some money out of the capital and adding it to this year, so we can be consistent and not have a big drop in the amount we have available
okay.
for grantees.
So that's certainly something the commission can consider. We've looked at that question. We don't see a legal impediment. I mean, the objective is the commission is, you know, statute says the commission is to support statewide financial education. Of course, you don't want to do anything to impair the long-term sustainability of the fund, but as you've seen, the fund continues to grow. We're still continuing to make collections, and so we don't see an impediment for the commission doing that if the commission chooses
to
do
it. It seems like we're just now gaining momentum and getting the word out there that we have money available, and to all of a sudden say, well, we really don't have that much, might be a scar for this year that we could do something about in the long term.
And I shared the same concern
good.
On that topic.
Good.
So I think it would be good if we could keep it, because it has taken a while to get our name out and that there are these funds and to attract good programs,
yeah.
and we don't want backwards progress.
And we also have somebody now that's where their focus is, right? Is finding
yes.
groups
yes.
to
yes.
and get out there.
And I know in February, the commission, whether this is a factor or not, I don't know, but talked about the you know, additional one-time contribution that would come from the Department of Savings
right.
and Mortgage
Lending.
That was an unanticipated, you know, infusion of capital that was not expected, and
yeah.
that might help.
That we could use part of that for this year to just keep the levels at a consistent amount.
And just to chime in, I agree with what you're saying in terms of it's got to be an attractive amount. It's a lot of work to go after a grant. There's responsibility associated with it. So whether it's, you know, 185 or 250 is one question. The other thing would be just the amount of grant per awardee is the other issue. So you could keep your dollar amount lower, but be sure that we're granting X amount as a minimum.
Right. Well, that was our thought process, because the current, I believe we have 8 grantees at about $32,000 apiece currently. And so you could continue to keep the amount higher, just award fewer grants would have been if you stayed with the lower amount. In the upcoming cycle, but that, because I do agree with you. I mean, somebody's probably not going to apply. There's a lot of administrative work that it goes along with
yes.
the grant. They may not apply for a $10,000 grant,
right.
but
and keep in mind they've got to incur the expenses in most cases before they get reimbursed.
First, that's right.
So a small nonprofit probably can't, you know,
yeah.
that's going to discourage them as it is. So.
You know, and also, since we're getting funds in here in addition to just the earnings of itself, you could say the fund, if the fund increases more than 10%, we want to use any excess funds above that to go ahead and give out.
That's true.
Do you want to give an update on your contribution, just so everybody has an understanding of
sure.
what that is?
Sure. The commission voted for SML to contribute funds to the endowment. What we discovered was not in that motion was the exact amount. We had discussed $500,000 at that meeting, but it wasn't in the motion. So after discussion with Alice McAfee from the Attorney General's office and the other two agencies' counsel, my recommendation to the chair was that in rather than contributing that money based on the earlier motion in August, in this month, to wait and come back to you all with a recommendation for that specific amount, and if you all decide to have a motion and pass it for that specific amount, then we would contribute it at that time. But we're definitely, you'll see in the budget, we have reserved $500,000. We've set aside that $500,000 still for that purpose. So,
okay, great.
So it sounds to me that the recommendation is that we're at $250,000 for this year. Okay, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve $250,000 for the upcoming 2018-19 grant cycle for the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Hector? Okay, is there any other further discussion on that? All right, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Next, we have a discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the readoption of the investment policy for the Texas Department of Banking.
Stephanie, please, we got to go over the legislation related to the Public Funds Investment Act, Stephanie.
Right, okay, beginning on page 85 are the five bills that were passed this legislative session that related to the Public Funds Investment Act. And so what we did as a bullet point recap of each of the bills and then tried to note a couple of them aren't applicable to state agencies, so we noted that on there. I think Commissioner Pettyjohn talked about a little earlier today is our funds are not covered by the Public Funds Investment Act, but we try to follow it as closely as possible. And for the reports that y'all get for the Department of Banking, the two guarantee funds are really under the Guarantee Fund Advisory Council. They do the investment decisions for those two funds. The investment policy that you have is just for seized funds. And we hopefully we only hold seized funds for about 4 to 6 months. So what we invest in is pretty much where they are, and we keep them short term because we're hoping to get rid of them. So a lot of the things in the changes really aren't going to affect the way we do business. But just for a flavor, the changes, there's technical corrections, there's amendments to certain qualified investments like no-load mutual funds, investment pools, the Federal Home Loan Bank Board letter of credits. There's changes to definitions. Business organization is one of them that comes to mind. And then there were some prohibitions, and I think it was in a couple of the bills that you can't do investments with Sudan, Iran, or any other foreign terrorist. And so what we did is it's actually required by the Public Funds Investment Act to provide this update of what happened during the legislative session. And then on page 88 actually starts the policy. And we tried to put, for ease for each of you, we tried to put what bill made the change. And so hopefully that made it easier for your review. And then on page 98 starts the clean policy. And so I'll be happy to answer any questions, but I think they're all pretty straightforward, what the change was and then how we implemented it.
Any questions for Stephanie?
No.
Okay, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the readoption of the investment policies for the Texas Department of Banking?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Victor, any further discussion? Okay, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. The ayes have it, and the motion passes. There being no further business, this meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas is now adjourned. The time is 9:32 a.m.